Live on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, it's time for Q&A with DJ Phone. Today's program is sponsored by Yavapai Regional Medical Center, High Country Rec Vee Center, Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Northern Arizona Vein Center. Now, here's your host for Q&A, DJ Phone.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Q&A. We're going to have a really entertaining in more ways than one show today. By the way, where you're sitting right now, do you have seat belts? Because you're going to need them in just a few minutes. I'll tell you why. We're going to open the show today with two author interviews. The first one will be, let's see, I can't see on the screen which one that's going to be, but I will promise you this. We're going to have the interview today that I conducted just yesterday with the author Sharon Salzberg, who has written a wonderful book called Real Happiness. And then the other interview, you might want to check your blood pressure and tighten your seatbelt, because I chatted with Andrew Seidel. He is with the Freedom From Religion Foundation that was co-founded several years ago by a former clergyman. Now, mind you, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is not against religion in any way, shape, or form. So don't write me a letter. They're just against religion being a part of government and public affairs. And he's got a new book. It's called The Founding Myth. Now listen to this. He writes in that book, this is his belief, not mine, that America was not, as many people deeply believe, founded on Christian principles. So, brace yourself for that one. So that'll be coming up during the first half hour today. And then after the news and weather break, we're going to talk to three of the principals from the new PCA production, The Unexpected Guest. That is coming to the main stage. That is an Agatha Christie play. If that doesn't get your interest, I don't know what will. We'll have Ron Lutz and Liz Rogers among the three here to talk about The Unexpected Guest. So that's coming up on today. Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live around the world at KQNA.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec Vee Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Ready to recycle Northern Arizona? Recycle with Patriot Disposal's Smart Stream Recycle Technology. How does it work? Just put everything in one bin. It's that easy. Patriot Disposal drives one truck down your street for a smaller carbon footprint. Patriot Disposal's material recovery facility separates the recyclables from the waste stream, reducing the amount of trash going into the landfill. Smart Stream Recycle Technology. Call Patriot Disposal at 775-9000 or 203-9995.
Gardening in the mountains can be challenging. For local tips and tricks, tune into The Mountain Gardener with Ken Lane.
This week we cover how to prepare your garden soils for the best production, best harvest, best color, fragrance. There's a soil recipe I'll share that will make a difference in your garden. You'll be a garden pro after this week's show.
The Mountain Gardener, three times every weekend, every Saturday and Sunday at 8 in the mornings, and again at 11 on Saturdays, on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA.
Folks, Grandpa Gettle here for Gettle's High Desert Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. The Gettle HVAC legacy began back in the late 1920s and continues today, two generations later, with my grandsons Adam and Ted Gettle, who started Gettle's High Desert Mechanical in 1987, providing the highest quality installations and service available in central and northern Arizona. Now, these boys know that most people buy a new air conditioning system just once in their lifetime and recognize the importance of this investment. You might say Gettle's is a home of the once-in-a-lifetime experience, keeping you cool in the summer and warm in the winter with ingenuity, innovation, and, of course, integrity of business practice. Your comfort for a lifetime.
Call Gettles at 772-2751 or visit GettlesHDM.com. Don't settle. Get Gettles.
You're listening. listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities KQNA. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Welcome back to Q&A. As we launch into a new decade, besides the typical goals of eating healthier, exercising more, and spending more time with family and less time on computer screens, many people are reconsidering what it takes to be happier. Well, a pioneer in the field of meditation, a world-renowned teacher, and a New York Times best-selling author, Sharon Salzberg has played a pivotal role in bringing meditation and mindfulness into mainstream American culture since 1974. Now, her new New York Times best-selling down-to-earth guide to meditation has been revised and updated. It's called Real Happiness, the 10th Anniversary Edition, a 28-day program to realize the power of meditation. Sharon, welcome to the show. Tell us why the skills of concentration, mindfulness, and loving-kindness are so key.
Well, I think we live in a time when we tend to be kind of distracted and we feel disconnected from our own lives and activities and from one another. So if we learn how to be more concentrated, more attentive, to listen better, to have more compassion for ourselves and others, it's a different quality of life. And those are the very things we learn in meditation.
What originally brought you to meditation?
Well, I was a college student. It was my sophomore year, and there was a philosophy requirement, so I just kind of arbitrarily picked this Asian philosophy course, and it was in the context of that course that I first heard, oh, there's such a thing as these methods, these practices of training your attention. They're called meditation, and if you do them, you could be a whole lot happier. So that was intriguing and captivating, and I looked around. I was going to school in Buffalo, New York, and I didn't see it anywhere, and so I created this independent study project, which the university accepted. I asked to go to India and study meditation, and they said, okay, here's your junior year abroad. You know, be happy.
I know as I get older, I realize how many things we always attributed to Asian customs and ancient remedies, things like this, are now acceptable here. So when it comes to meditation, how has the landscape changed since you began teaching in 74?
It's changed enormously. It really used to be the case that, like in 1974, 75, 76, I would be at a party or some social situation, and somebody would say to me, what do you do? And I'd say, I teach meditation. And they would kind of go, oh, that's so weird, and kind of sidle away. And now the single most common response I hear is, I'm so stressed out, I could use some of that.
They used to say that weird stuff about acupuncture and Tai Chi, too, didn't they?
That's right.
You know, meditation feels even more necessary and important nowadays. So how does your book, Real Happiness, fit into that movement?
Well, I tried to, you know, create, first of all, it's a program, so it's really like an experiment, so you can begin or renew a practice that way. And I tried to make it, like, extremely down-to-earth and very practical, and there's renewed science in it in this 10th anniversary edition. You know, so I think it really speaks to our time.
Do you ever get questions from beginners like, how do I know if I'm doing it right, or will I ever make progress?
Oh, every day, really. Those are the questions. They're important questions.
So
the trouble with how you know if you're doing it right is that the way you discover if you're doing it right is the way it affects your life, not what happens in that formal period, say 10 minutes a day. You just find that you're different, the way you speak to yourself when you've made a mistake, how you are meeting a stranger, how you are in a time of adversity. You see the shifts there. So if you remember to look at your life as a medium for the change, that's where you'll find it.
Now, I remember a sales manager telling me many years ago that a good habit is just as tough to break as a bad habit. Does that kind of part explain your 28-day program to institute and make regular these good habits?
Yes, and I think, you know, my hope is that everyone would emerge from the 28 days with a greater sense of confidence and interest and clarity so that you can choose which practice you want to pursue, because there are many that are presented, and you have a greater sense of what's likely to happen and what isn't, and above all, you know, really be developing some compassion.
Is starting a meditation practice easy, and how does one get started?
I think it is easy as long as you don't have kind of unfair expectations about what should happen. You know, people sometimes sit down and they think, well, I'm going to wipe out all thoughts in 2 minutes or things like that. And our goal isn't actually to wipe out our thoughts, but to develop a different relationship to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have many thoughts and be doing well, you know. So if you can have enough understanding of what to expect and so on, it's pretty easy. You just, I would say, set a timer, honestly, you know, so that you don't have to always be looking at your watch, and set it for 5 minutes and sit somewhere quite comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Close your eyes or not, however you feel most at ease. Choose an object of awareness, like the feeling of the breath, or maybe it's a saying or something you want to be repeating. And just rest your attention on that object. And then the real key comes when you realize, oh, my attention's not staying there. You know, that I'm lost in thought or I've fallen asleep. So the real skill of meditation is being able to begin again. You realize you've been gone. See if you can let go. Bring your attention back to that original object.
So does that describe what to do if you get distracted and need to start over?
Yeah, I mean, and it's fantastic to start over rather than, you know, berate ourselves for an hour and a half because our mind wandered, which is extremely time-consuming and also exhausting. So that's why we sometimes describe meditation as a kind of resilience training. It's learning how to start over and bounce back in a better way.
I've heard my doctor tell me meditation is healthier and cheaper than medication. True?
I don't know if it's healthier in all cases, but it's certainly cheaper. And it would be a great adjunct, you know, even if you're taking medication for something. It's often a great adjunct.
How do you differentiate between meditation and mindfulness?
Well, I think meditation is like one way of cultivating mindfulness, you know, where you're putting a dedicated period into it. You can also cultivate mindfulness just washing dishes, you know, or in other activities. I like the meditative path because it is a dedicated period, and it's like strength training or something, you know. You can then take the skill out, the strength out, to different activities.
Now, you have 10 downloadable meditations that are audio-guided by you and easily accessible with QR codes in the book and online. How can our listeners access those?
Well, if you have the book, then there's a link that you get, you know, that will bring you, you know, to those meditations, which I did lead.
Mm-hmm. And how can our listeners get a copy of your book, Real Happiness, a 28-day program to realize the power of meditation?
Well, if you go on my website, which is SharonSalzberg.com, SalzBerg, there should be links to the book.
And your book delves into establishing a daily practice and sharing the knowledge that in 4 weeks, anyone can connect with the innate joy and tranquility, bringing greater resiliency, creativity, peace, and balance. And for those reasons, we thank you so much for joining us today on Q&A. Continued success for you in your publishing.
Thank you so much.
Membership in the Prescott Chamber of Commerce is good for your business. As a member, your business will be listed on the Prescott Chamber website and in the Chamber's annual directory. You're also eligible to place brochures in the Chamber's lobby and opportunities galore to network with other business people at monthly mixers and other events. Join the Prescott Chamber today at 445-2000. Prescott's business advocate, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop. Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rugby Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Are you financially prepared for retirement and saving in taxes the way you want to be? The Financial Facts and Tax Show can help answer that question. We cover topics like income planning, tax planning, and asset allocation. Listen to KQNA AM 1130, 99.9, and 95.5 FM Saturdays at 12 noon to Financial Facts and Tax with Ron and Barbara to help secure your finances.
Financial Facts and Tax is paid for by American Financial Security and is solely responsible for its content.
This is Linda Nichols with the City of Prescott Parks and Recreation Board. The Prescott Dog Park is a gem of our community. The park opened in 2014 and hosts over 400,000 annually. APS was a major contributor for the park, and we thank them for their generosity. Now we need your help to support new amenities. As a business or a citizen, your contribution will help improve the park for years to come. To donate or to become a sponsor, go to PrescottDogPark.com or call 777-1558.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Welcome back to Q&A. Hey, in today's contentious political climate, understanding religion's role in American government is probably more important than ever. Christian nationalists assert that our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and advocate an agenda based on this popular historical claim. But is it true? Well, we have the man who can answer that question. He's Andrew Seidel. He has written a book called The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. Andrew Seidel works as a constitutional attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, litigating cases involving religion and the Constitution. Before we talk about your book, The Founding Myth, tell our listeners what the Freedom From Religion Foundation is.
We are a membership-driven organization devoted to defending the First Amendment, to keeping state and church separate. We got about 30,000 members nationwide, including a chapter in Southern Arizona and about 1,000 members in Arizona right now. We need all the support we can get at this particular time.
And Andrew, I interviewed Dan Barker a couple of years ago about a book he had written. Isn't he the founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation? Isn't he also a former minister?
Dan is a former minister turned atheist. He is one of the co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And he joined pretty early, but he's not actually one of the founders. But still certainly a leader here, though.
Gotcha. Now, you assert in your book that the single most accurate predictor of the Donald Trump victory in 2016, the predictor of a Trump voter, was not race, religion, or political party.
That's right. It was whether or not somebody believed that the United States was a Christian nation. If you ask the person, do you believe the United States is a Christian nation or founded on Judeo-Christian principles and that it should return to those foundations? Somebody who says yes to those questions is a Christian nationalist. And that was the number one predictor of a Trump voter in the 2016 election, which is striking to most people because we often hear about the evangelical support of Trump or the Republican support of Trump, but really what carried him into office was this wave of Christian nationalism.
Andrew, if you look at social media, you'll see an awful lot of people confusing things they see on the U.S. currency, like in God We Trust, statements in the Pledge of Allegiance, the Declaration of Independence, the Ten Commandments. They confuse those things with the U.S. Constitution, don't they?
All the time, and all of those different things that you mentioned I address in the Founding Myth. I have a whole part that examines each one of the Ten Commandments and compares them to America's founding principles. I have a whole section on the Bible that compares the principles there. Even things like In God We Trust and One Nation Under God, I address all those in the book. And the central question that I was trying to ask in the Founding Myth was, did Judeo-Christian principles positively influence the founding of the United States? And the answer is No, they didn't. And in fact, it's a good thing that they didn't, because those principles that you find in the Bible, and especially those that are central to Christian nationalism, they're thoroughly opposed to the principles on which the United States was built. The two systems differ and conflict to just a massive degree, so much so that it's fair to say that, although I'll be blunt, Christianity is un-American.
Wow. Now, you also say it's very, very influential, and you mention education policy, discrimination, transgender rights and women's rights, even the social safety net.
Mm-hmm. So while it did not have an influence on the founders, it does have an influence today, unfortunately, because Donald Trump is president, because Mike Pence is vice president. You know, these lies now are driving public policy. We certainly see it at the Department of Education. We see it in our immigration policy. The Muslim ban is a great example. The redefinition of religious freedom in an attempt to codify discrimination. We're seeing judges even deciding cases based on the lies and the myths of Christian nationalism. So it's not just these culture war issues. And if you want to oversimplify it, these lies are destroying our country. They're gnawing away at our liberty, and we the people have a duty to stand up to the lies and the bullies pushing them.
Now, evangelicals often point to the Ten Commandments. What was the Ten Commandments' effect on our legal foundations?
Zero. And this is, first of all, anybody who's presented with that claim ought to ask, well, which Ten Commandments are you talking about? Because there are quite a few different sets of Ten Commandments, four in any particular Bible, which most people don't realize. And then the different religions translate them differently and things like that. And I go over all this in the founding myth, and then I walk through each of the individual commandments to see whether or not they did have any influence on the founding of this country. And it turns out that they really didn't.
And in the founding myth, you talk about the values and principles on display in the Bible, and you mention biblical principles like hell, original sin, faith, obedience, redemption, and biblical notions of crime, punishment, and government. How do those conflict with America's founding principles?
So, I mean, if you look at, for instance, the last one that you mentioned, the governments that appear in the Bible, you know, there's no whiff of democratic government anywhere in the Bible. It's all either theocracies or monarchies or both. If we look at the idea of hell, which is more properly a Christian principle, it's more limited to the New Testament. You know, the idea of eternal torture and torment is fundamentally opposed to the idea that you shall have no cruel and unusual punishment, which is right there in our Constitution in the Eighth Amendment. You know, there are at every turn just these massive fundamental conflicts and disagreements between the Bible and the principles of the Bible and the principles on which our nation was founded. And that's why I make the kind of bold claim that I do, that this is un-American.
And what does your book have to say about politicians in times of national peril imposing their religion on others?
And so that really goes to the idea that we are one nation under God, or in God we trust, or God bless America. You know, none of those phrases that we often hear, especially we hear them from the Christian nationalists, none of those phrases date from the founding of the United States. They're all from well after. The earliest one dates to 1863. But they have two things in common. One, politicians were using these times of national fear and strife to impose their religion on other people. This was the height of the Civil War, the height of the Red Scare, when really to try to speak out against some politician using their public office to promote their private religion would have been incredibly difficult. And then the second thing we see is that these phrases are often used to obliterate these previous unifying themes and impose these religious and divisive themes instead. So one nation indivisible became one nation under God indivisible. You're literally dividing the indivisible with God.
Wow. The name of the book is The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American by Andrew Seidel. How can our listeners get a copy of your book and learn more about your writing?
The book is available at fine bookstores everywhere. I am on social media, Andrew L. Seidel on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. And you can check out the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org.
And we thank you very much for joining us today on Q&A. Continued success in your publishing.
Thank you so much.
James Roush here of Wallach & Volk Mortgage. Are you interested in buying a home and just have a million questions running through your head? The James Roush team at Wallach & Volk Mortgage is here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by appointment. Even if you need to meet on Saturday morning because of your work schedule, we'll be there. Call the James Roush team at 445-8730, Wallach & Volk Mortgage.
License number 00128295, LNS number 162209, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec Bee Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Findlay Toyota Prescott is kicking off the new year by keeping it simple. Simple to haul more people and more cargo to more places with the sport utility that's time-tested, big on value, and bold on attitude. Highlander's powerful V6, towing capacity, a warehouse worth of room, and creature comforts for every seat no matter what you've got going on today. Take the keys to a brand new 2019 Findlay Toyota Highlander for as low as 0.9% APR financing, $2,500 customer cash back, or lease for only $289 per month. And receive Toyota Care, our complimentary maintenance plan for 2 years or 25,000 miles, and roadside service for 2 years and unlimited miles. Don't miss your chance to save thousands on the last of the 2019s. Rush to Findlay Toyota Prescott and FindlayToyotaPrescott.com. Now open Sundays.
Hi, I'm Jamal McCoy, and here at Findlay Toyota Prescott, we are everybody's hometown dealer.
All offers on approved credit, excludes tax, title, license, and 495 dock fee. Model 6946, finance for 60 months, lease for 36 months with $29.99 due at sign.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-830-4914. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-830-4914. That's 800-830-4914. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-830-4914. 800-830-4914.
We're KQ&A.
Thanks for making the Talk of the Quad Cities KQ&A your choice for your Wednesday the 29th. I'm DJ Phone with a check of local and state news and weather together. Brought to you by Wallach and Volk. A ceremony was held at Sky Harbor Airport at which they unveiled a plaque dedicated to the late Senator John McCain ahead of the completion of a major Terminal 3 renovation. The senator's widow, Cindy McCain, says her husband was moved when he learned of plans for the honor back in 2017.
To join the likes of Barry Goldwater in having a world-class facility representing Phoenix and the nation is just a wonderful thing. He was, yes, this is great, and then he sat back and realized what a special honor this was. He was very, very humbled by it.
Scattered rain and snow showers today and this evening, dissipating late tonight, with today's high only 47 in Prescott, Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, and Dewey-Humboldt, chilling overnight to a breezy 28, then clearing to mostly sunny highs around 52 and 56 tomorrow and Friday, up to 62 all weekend, before Monday and Tuesday's big chill arrives. In Cottonwood and the Verde Valley, scattered showers continuing today with a high near 54, ending tonight night and cooling to a breezy 35 after bedtime. Warming toward and through the sunny weekend with highs near 58 tomorrow, 63 Friday, 70 Saturday and Sunday before the huge back-to-work cool down. This news and weather, a service of Wallach and Volk. I'm DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 1130 AM, 99.9 and 95.5 FM, KQNA. Like us on Facebook and listen live worldwide at KQNA.com and stay tuned. Q&A will continue in just a moment on KQNA.
That's the sound of healthy hearts. Music to the ears of heart experts at Yavapai Regional Medical Center's James Family Heart Center. Our leading cardiologists and skilled heart specialists work together to detect and treat valve disease. In fact, YRMC's Heart Center is a national model for valve disease diagnosis and treatment. Our team creates customized care plans based on each patient's unique health profile. Our treatments combine leading-edge technology with the latest non-surgical procedures. This means you or someone you love can get back to an active and healthier life sooner. A national care model for valve disease, world-class technology, the latest non-surgical procedures, and amazing heart specialists. All at the James Family Heart Center at YRMC. Inspired by you.
Hey everybody, it's Sanford Cohen. Join me along with Mike and the Doctor every Friday afternoon at 4 for Let's Talk Sports right here on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Tune in for all the latest sports news, interviews, and all kinds of fun stuff. It's right here on KQ&A. See you Friday.
Listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Well, is everyone still with me? Well, that was quite an experience, but First Amendment, freedom of speech, and I know some people be upset to hear that, but I'm glad we got both the hot and the cool interviews in today. Speaking of cool, really neat play coming to the Prescott Center for the Arts main stage. It's Agatha Christie. That gets my attention right away. It's called The Unexpected Guest, and we have Ron Lunt and Liz Rogers here. They are two of the main characters in the play. Now, the play starts tomorrow night at the PCA main stage on Marina Street. Let me start with Liz. What do you go through as an actor on opening night, just that half hour before curtain?
Well, there's a lot of makeup, a lot of hairspray, a lot of last minute, are we sure this costume is what we want to go with?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a reminder of the work that we've done for the last 2 months, the
sure.
relationships that we've built on and off stage, and it's time to celebrate that and bring the director's vision to the stage and hope people like it.
Yeah. Liz, can you pull that microphone right there over toward you? For some reason, I'm not getting a real good response on this one.
All right.
Can you say hello to us?
How about now?
That's much better. Okay, let's go with that one. Is this your first time on the main stage, right?
This is my first show with PCA on the main stage. I did a lot of community theater when I was younger and put everything on hold to have children. And One of whom is here today.
And your name is?
Alora,
welcome to the show. Nice to have you on to make your mom real nervous. You've been appearing at the rehearsals and watching what's going on, correct?
Yes, that is correct. I've become known as the Tiny Tyrant within that theater group.
The Tiny Tyrant. Yes. And you're how old?
I'm 17.
Have you appeared in shows before?
Not since elementary school.
Oh, really? Really? So she took a break too, didn't she?
She's a musician and an artist.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, speaking of talented, creative people, you also have Ron Lunt here. Ron, you've appeared in the PCA for years. Tell us what other shows you've done.
Recently, I've done Comedy of Errors, a Shakespeare play. I've done Dinner Party, a Neil Simon play, which was a lot of fun. Rainmaker quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a couple of reader theaters and some smaller black box theater productions for PCA. This one is the first Agatha Christie that I've done, so this should be fun.
But you were in Dracula. just
I was pulled in Dracula. True, thank you. I was pulled in Dracula in the last minute because they needed somebody to die early, and they needed somebody to haul sets off.
During, there you go.
And so I was apparently the one that they voted for.
Proving once again there are no small roles, only small actors, right?
That's true. That's
indeed
true.
Hey, you know, speaking of dying early, isn't that kind of a feature of the unexpected guest? Don't we come upon a fatality real early?
Yes, it's kind of fun because we actually have a dead guy on stage for a good hour or so.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and trying to keep him
dead.
and not falling over has been always kind of fun. But it's a staple, I think, of Agatha Christie, always having a dead body. This one is always on stage. So, yes, we actually have a live human being playing a dead person.
Well, I've died on the air several times. So I can certainly identify with that. You know, it's funny because one of my all-time favorite movies is Sunset Boulevard, which opens with a dead person floating in the pool. And then, of course, we found out, how did it get to that point? That, of course, obviously is part of the Agatha Christie lure, correct?
Correct, yes. As with all Agatha Christie, you have a dead body, and then you have everybody accusing, pointing fingers, telling lies, and just manipulating to get around the real truth. And that's no exception in our play.
So let's discuss the characters you portray, Liz.
My name is Laura Warwick. My husband is the dead man. But I didn't kill him.
Of course not.
No.
Ron, how about you?
I am Michael Starkwitter. I am the unfortunate person that has a car accident outside Laura's mansion, and I stumble into the house, and I discover the dead body and start playing with that, see what happens.
Now, here's one of the things I'm sure is a real acting challenge for you. I remember an interview with Alfred Hitchcock where he said that he described what a MacGuffin is. And he said the MacGuffin is basically what the character on the screen doesn't know is not the answer to the question, but the audience does. So you, because you're familiar with the script, of course, you've acted through the whole story. You know what's going to happen, but you can't convey that to the audience because they're still playing those. They're still working everything out with the tumblers clicking, trying to figure this out, right?
Absolutely. It is a little bit of a challenge because we do know specifically who did it, and we have to keep it well hidden. But I think the chemistry that we have on stage with our Liz in my first scene is a good 25 minutes alone.
Really?
So we spend a lot of time with dialogue back and forth. And it's more or less not giving it away, but still showing the audience that there's a story here that you have to figure it out.
Yeah. So, Laura, who did it? No.
I would never.
There you go. There. Now, there's a true theater person
for
you, right?
They actually kept me away from the ending for months.
Well, you know what? Don't feel too bad, because in some television series and movies that are going to have the audience guessing, they don't even give the actors, knowledge who did it, because sometimes they'll give them three or four different answers or scripts to explain what happened, and they don't know which one's going to air or end up on the screen. So sometimes you got to play it that way.
That would be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That
not
would
knowing,
be fun.
As
I
the
like that.
Actor not knowing?
Yeah.
Ooh.
One of the things that I think is particularly fascinating about this play is that everybody knows exactly who did it, but everybody's answer is different.
Oh, okay.
I know who did it. The other actors, the other characters all know exactly who did it, but they're not necessarily the same.
You know, this sounds kind of like a Rashomon kind of situation where you've got four people who are all telling the truth, but from different points of view, aren't they?
That's exactly what happens.
Right.
And I try to manipulate some of the people thinking that I can help along with this murder, maybe solve it. And then someone else pops in, gives me another excuse, and then maybe we can use them. What's next? How do we get this to work?
Uh-huh. So what drew you to the play? Take me through the audition process, and here's why. Because I don't know if you saw the story, but a couple days ago, the Prescott Daily Courier had a front page story on the audition process.
And
I remember seeing Paul Epic on the cover there. Take me through your audition for this, Ron.
Well, we all showed up in the theater one day. I had read the play numerous times beforehand and kind of had an idea which character I would like to play. We did cold readings. Basically, the director said, okay, let's read this page, read with this character, read with this actor. And we did various – I got to try various characters, some that I hadn't considered doing. and kind of decided the one that I ended up with was the one I really wanted. There was a couple other ones I would have been interested in, but mm-hmm. I think this one had, for me, the most interest. Mm-hmm. And there were some people that I had acted with that I got to audition with, which is always fun. But with Liz, I knew her from improv, got to do some auditioning with her, and that was just like improv, basically, is what it was.
So there was some chemistry there already.
Right? Made it very easy. I think we had rapport right away. It made it very easy to read lines with her, so that was fun. I enjoyed the auditioning process. I think some people are afraid of, but I find it kind of fascinating because it's more, I have an idea what I would like to do, but until I get a chance to try it and with other people, do I really want that? And give me the opportunity to do that.
How about you, Liz? Describe your audition process.
Well, I chose to audition because of the director, Bill Osborne.
This is his first time at the main stage, right?
It is. And we know Bill because his wife, Celia, is also in our improv theater with Mile High Comedy. So we've gotten to know Bill over the time. And so my decision to audition for that was, you know, it's Bill. I'm going to be comfortable auditioning. There's always a fear of rejection when you put yourself out there, and it's okay, but I can handle that because of who it's coming from. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody who doesn't already know who I am. And the sitting there in that room full of really talented people, and it's a point of remembering whether or not you're selected for a part isn't a dismissal of your talent. It's you didn't fit this part.
This time, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And reading the character descriptions, I didn't expect to end up where I did.
Really? So both of you were in Mile High Comedy Troupe, right?
Yes.
Is it still, well, and since this play, The Unexpected Guest, opens with a dead body on the floor, is it still true that dying is easy and comedy is hard?
Yes.
It's different. When we're doing our improv work, we're not following anybody else's script. And while, yes, it can be challenging to come up with something to say, you don't feel like you owe it to an author or owe it to a director to represent what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
So it's different. And we go back and forth because we've still had our improv rehearsals in between our script rehearsals. And
you know, based on what the writer is trying to say, you guys might really appreciate this true story, by the way. Now, we all know that when you do a stage play, you're pretty much bound to every word of the play, right?
Correct.
The actor William H. Macy is also a stage producer, and he was staging a play. He had a role in it, and he's doing a scene with one of the actors he hired. Now, Macy wrote this play, wrote every word of it, and all of a sudden, the actor he hired starts riffing and kind of improvising. And during the performance, Macy kind of fixes him with a glare, but stays in character. And then afterwards says, let me ask you about that scene where you were saying this and saying that. You don't think the play is funny? You don't like my words? And that was the actor's first introduction to, you stay with the script. this is not improv. This is a stage play.
Ouch.
Ouch, yeah.
And this is where Tiny Tyrant really earned
Tiny
her name.
Tiny Tyrant. So what's going on, Alora? Why are you a Tiny Tyrant?
Well, first I was helping my mom read the script. I really liked reading some characters in the voice of Mickey Mouse, just to make...
Nice. Keep a set nice and loose.
Yeah, yeah.
She would sit there with post-it notes on our scripts, and every time we had a word wrong, we got little tabs, and at the end of the day, Ron and I would look at each other with our colored scripts and all of the things that we missed.
I think we have a future director here, don't we?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I get all my bossiness from her.
Here we go. Here we
go. Throw your mom under the bus. Go ahead.
Ryan, we were talking about the audition process, and when I lived in Los Angeles, I used to go during pilot season. I would do roles reading sides at the casting network in Valley Village, and we have different casting directors all the time. And when Rick Pagano, who's Pagano Manweller Casting Agency, has done something like 40 TV series and 120 movies, he told us one day, don't be surprised if when you audition for a role that you have your mind on, the casting director says, not for this, but we may have you, you may be better in this role. And they know their business. And on that point, with the Oscars being a week from Sunday, how would you feel about a new Oscars category, Best Casting?
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be.
You know, when I first heard about that, I thought, you're crazy. And then it dawned on me. How many times have you seen a movie role where it's not great acting, but that person just happens to be that character?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
And who chose that character? The casting director.
I had a director at PCA tell me, actually the first show I did, Rainmaker, she told me that when you audition, you're not necessarily auditioning for this play. You're auditioning for this play and all my future plays.
Cool.
So be ready.
Yeah.
I've taken that to heart. I really truly believe that. Like Liz says, if I don't get cast in a role, it's not because I don't think I did a good job. It's because I didn't fit the director's vision of what happened. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely fine with me. And I like auditioning just because it's practice. Also, I consider it a lot like improv. I can walk. I'd rather do a cold reading than have a prepared monologue because I think I do better up there. In fact, one of the roles that I auditioned for in Unexpected Guest, Jan, I never considered
great.
That. I enjoyed that audition so much. It wasn't a big role, but it was. I think it's an important role, and it was a lot of fun to do. And I never read the lines before I actually went up on stage and did it. And it was just a good time.
Who else is in the show with you?
Okay, in addition to us, like I mentioned, Celia Osborne, she plays my mother-in-law. Bliss Streetman plays...
My former neighbor.
Ah, Bliss.
We had a wall between us, and that was all.
Can we mention your name, or is that
probably not good?
Of course.
Not sure. She'll know me. Yeah.
She plays Miss Bennett.
I remember her from Mile High Comedy, too.
Yep, and yes, we work with her there as well.
Parker Anderson
plays...
That's our friend, too.
Plays Angel. He's a male nurse attendant. Adam Farland plays Julian, who is the next-door neighbor. I don't know Garrett's last name offhand.
I don't remember
his last name. He plays Jan. And we have Sue...
Yui
and Bruce...
Heskett
as the police officers investigating the crime.
And part of your cast includes, of course, Parker Anderson, who also was a director.
Yes, sir.
Does being an actor make him a better director? Or does being a director make him a better actor?
I think he's sympathetic to the issues that the director faces.
Mm-hmm.
He'll share stories afterwards.
Sure.
When I was directing, we had this. But he's not one who's going to push against Bill as the director and say, oh, I think it should be this way. Bill is very collaborative. We've all contributed to, hey, how about we interpret it this way? Even, again, Tiny Tyrant has gotten her notes
stage. I took notes when I watched and I made note of what I was like, oh, you could try this. And my ideas actually went through.
Isn't that something? You know, with the casting process and with being in the right role, I'm reminded of a story. And I've told this on the air a half dozen times, but it applies here. Have you all seen the Sissy Spacek movie, Carrie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that, Laura?
I don't watch a lot of movies.
Oh. Okay. Well, then get out.
And Mom would not encourage that one.
Well, that's pretty spooky. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but Sissy Spacek, she was playing, I think, a high school sophomore or junior. She was 26 when she did that role. And it was based, of course, on a Stephen King book. And when the casting call went out, at the casting set, you had all these, you know, dressed up, made up, poofed up, you know, Hollywood starlets who wanted that role of Carrie. And Sissy Spacek had read the book. She shows up having not washed her hair for 3 weeks, wearing basically dressed like a flood victim, and with her chin on her chest, kind of like the whole world is against me. And the casting director said, my God, that's Carrie. There you are.
Little research.
It does pay off,
yes,
doesn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yes.
So if there was any play that came to town the next couple of years that you could choose to star in, what would it be, Liz?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I spend most of the time, my daughter and I both, we love musicals, but I don't sing well. So
that would be a bad fit, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still working on her for that.
Yeah, they're trying to convince me to audition for Mamma Mia, but I don't think they
do.
Quite know what's...
Well, if you're worried about your singing for Mamma Mia, Pierce Brosnan didn't for the movie, did he?
Good point.
Yeah.
But Pierce Brosnan has a few characteristics that probably kind of help.
Oh, he's very appealing in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
But the man can't sing.
Okay, Mom.
I mean, you know, I tried, in fact, at the casting network, I tried auditioning for a musical one day. And the one time I tried to sing, my accompaniment was... Oh! So, yeah, that was kind of a big failure on my part. Ron, your dream play, your dream role?
Actually, I did mine this last summer when I did Comedy of Errors Shakespeare. I always wanted to do a Shakespeare play because I didn't understand Shakespeare, and it just intrigued me. And I appreciate what I think is his writings and his sayings, and I got a chance to star in that one. And that was, for me, that was the ultimate. I could be done now. I'm good.
Now, you know, I never read a word of Shakespeare when I was in school, but I have a wonderful book, Binet's Reader's Encyclopedia, that guides me to all these Shakespearean references that writers allude to in their magazine columns and newspaper stories and stuff. So I have to ask you this. When you are reciting Shakespeare as dialogue, does it sing?
It didn't until I found a website that had the Americanized English version next to the Shakespeare. I could match up the script. And when I was first beginning to memorize it, it was really tough. And I didn't understand a lot what I was saying. And then I found this website, and then it made sense. And then it really did sing. It was easier to memorize than I thought it would ever be.
I love the rhythm of the language.
We're talking iambic pentameter, aren't we?
Exactly.
You know, I interviewed an author last year. I interview best-selling authors probably twice a week. In fact, you just heard two of them before. But I interviewed an author last year who is a Shakespeare fanatic, but he's also a pop culture fanatic in movies. What he has done, he's created a series of books that take the actual scripts from contemporary movies rewritten in Shakespearean.
Oh.
And one of them is called Get Thee Back to the Future. Now, doesn't that just sound appealing to anybody who knows Shakespeare?
Once you've done a Shakespeare reading and to see the reverse of it, that would be fascinating, I think.
When I was younger, I played Juliet and I played Kate in Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, so how about that?
She was my favorite. I loved Kate.
How cool is that? You know, I've talked to actors and writers who said one of the reasons that so many of today's TV comedies and movies just don't seem as funny as a lot of the classic ones is because today's comedy writers tend to come out of Ivy League schools and they try and out-hip each other with snarky pop culture references that don't last very well in the future. Whereas going all the way back to Shakespeare up to the 1960s classics, they're making jokes about the human condition.
Yes.
And that's eternal and it's timeless, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. You learn so much when you read it and understand it.
Yeah.
We had a person who came to one of our performances for Shakespeare. She had a Shakespeare book, and she followed the play line by line. And when we were done, she came down and talked to a couple of us, and she said, "You guys were amazing. You didn't miss anything." And I'm thinking, wow, did you hear my second monologue in the first act? How did I not miss that? But I really appreciated someone that it came there and just really enjoyed what we were trying to do because it was fun. It really was.
And for our listeners' benefit and for Laura's, if you are not inside of, or if you are inside a theater and you're talking Shakespeare, what is the one title you never mention?
Sorry, we can't say it.
The Scottish Tragedy.
The Scottish Tragedy.
Right. Very well. Oh, we have true actors in our midst today. Liz Rogers and Ron Lund and Laura Zimmerman, thank you so much for joining us today on Q&A. You guys knock them dead tomorrow night, and this runs for two weekends, right?
Correct.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening, Sunday matinee, right?
Yes.
Very good.
And a Saturday matinee.
And a Saturday matinee.
Just one.
Yep, four performances this weekend, five next weekend.
Wow, so you're going to do a double header on Saturday, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Yep. Very good. That'll be a challenge for you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us on Q&A. Get your tickets at pca-az.net for The Unexpected Guest by Agatha Christie. Stay tuned. I've got tomorrow's Q&A guests and some final thoughts in just a moment on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live around the world at kqna.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec Bee Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Three, two, one, fire!
Ring in the new year at Fenway.
Dodge GMC Preston.
Ring into big discounts off MSRP and save thousands on all new GMC Sierras. The 2020 GMC Sierra 1500 Elevation goes all in with the bold presence and technology,
boosting your altitude and your attitude.
Ring in discounts over $12,000 for a Findlay GMC New Year price of only $34,550. That's 26% off MSRP. The 2020 GMC Sierra 1500 Crew Cab showcases a strong stance, innovative tech, and remarkable power to get the job done. Ring in discounts over $12,000 for a Findlay GMC New Year price of only $33,820. That's 26% off MSRP. Or take 0% financing for 72 months. Findlay GMC in Prescott and at FindlayBuickGMC.com, the local dealership that supports your community. GMC, we are professional grade. On approved credit, must finance through GM Financial. Does not include tax, license, title, and 495 doc fees. Stock numbers G43952, G44750.
Hello, this is Mark Goligoski. I feel fortunate to have been raised in Prescott, where I have also raised my family. School is my business, and supporting our public schools is everyone's business. We are always grateful when you pay your taxes, you choose to donate to PUSD and keep your tax dollars local. Your donations of up to $200 as an individual and $400 as a couple will fund all our extracurricular activities. Please go online to PrescottSchools.com and continue to invest in the future of Prescott. PUSD, where every child, every day matters.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Hey, keep in mind, with the Oscars a week from Sunday, the Harkins Theater's Best Picture Fest gets underway for 10 days, starting this Friday with screenings of Academy Best Picture nominees 1917, Ford vs. Ferrari, Jojo Rabbit, and Parasite on Friday. Now, Saturday, the lineup includes 1917, open captioned, Joker, Little Women, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, along with 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. screenings of the Bill Murray classic Groundhog Day. That's this Saturday. Then, on Super Bowl Sunday, you can enjoy 1917 and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood before the big game, then Parasite and Little Women that evening. And the Best Picture Fest continues each day next week, right up to Oscar night, February 9th. Check Harkins.com or your Prescott Daily Courier, page 2 or 3 for showtimes. Stay tuned now for Ben Shapiro, then Talk of a Town Prescott. Join me right back here tomorrow with longtime newspaper editor and world traveler Dennis Royalty and co-author Stephen Kotler for his new book, The Future is Faster Than You Think. That's Q&A Thursday at 2 o'clock when I will see you on the radio.
You've been listening to Q&A on KQ&A. Today's show was sponsored by High Country Rec V-Center, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Prescott College. The views expressed on today's show do not necessarily reflect the views of KQ&A, Prescott Valley Broadcasting, our employees, or our advertisers. Join us next time for Q&A with DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM in Prescott, and at 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, KQ&A.